Srila Prabhupada writes about his own feelings, his mission, his mood, and why he wrote Bhagavad Gita, and what it means for him and for us. So let's look at this carefully. Originally, Prabhupada says, I wrote Bhagavad Gita as it is, in the form in which it is presented now. So in other words, originally this was the 900-page Bhagavad Gita that we now have. However, when this book was first published, the original manuscript was unfortunately cut short to less than 400 pages without illustrations and without explanations for most of the original verses of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. So it was a shortened version, 50% was cut out. Yeah, that was the first Gita that we had in ISKCON. It was a purplish book, and it was half the size of this, but it was a Gita, and we studied from that. So Prabhupada's just making that comment. He's giving us a little history here. Because he says, in all of my other books, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Ishupanishad, etc., the system is that I give the original verse, its English transliteration, word-for-word Sanskrit-English equivalents, translations, and purports. So this was Prabhupada's style. This is what he began when he first began the Srimad Bhagavatam here in Vrindavan, in Radha Damodar Mandir, in the early 60s. He decided that he would undertake the translation of Srimad Bhagavatam, all 12 cantos. And how that happened was he was previously just printing Back to Godhead magazine. And in those days, it was less of a magazine and more of a paper, a newspaper. And one day, someone commented to him, you know, people take newspapers and they don't keep them. But if you want your message to be long-lived, then you should maybe think about books. So Prabhupada took that as Krishna speaking through that person, and then he decided, yes, I must write books. He carried on doing the Back to Godhead, but his purpose now, his main mission, was to translate the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he spent the early 60s up to 1965 in this endeavor. So he said that when we have the English transliteration, word-for-word, Sanskrit-English equivalents, translations, and purports, he says, this makes the book very authentic and scholarly, and also makes the meaning self-evident. I was not very happy, therefore, when I had to minimize my original manuscript. But later on, when the demand for Bhagavad Gita as it is considerably increased, I was requested by many scholars and devotees to present the book in its original form. Thus, the present attempt is to offer the original manuscript of this great book of knowledge with full parampara explanation in order to establish the Krishna consciousness movement more soundly and progressively. So here's Prabhupada explaining the real meaning of Bhagavad Gita in terms of our movement, for him and for the movement. It's to establish the movement soundly and progressively. So this is the foundation of the movement. Our Krishna consciousness movement is genuinely, is genuine, historically authorized, natural, and transcendental due to its being based on Bhagavad Gita as it is. That's what makes our movement bona fide, transcendental, genuine. As soon as we deviate from Bhagavad Gita, then we lose that authority, we lose that transcendental mood. So Prabhupada says, it is gradually becoming the most popular movement in the entire world, especially amongst the younger generation. It is becoming more and more interesting to the older generation also. Older gentlemen are becoming interested, so much so that the fathers and grandfathers of my disciples are encouraging us by becoming life members of our great society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So when Prabhupada wrote this in the late 60s and early 70s, well, this was published in 72, so this preface is for the 72 full edition of the Bhagavad Gita. Previous to that, we had the shortened version, the 50% version. So at that time, this was a very popular movement, especially amongst the younger generation, Prabhupada said, and also becoming more and more interesting to the older generation. So we had very good PR in those days. We were well known. And although some people ridiculed us, actually, Hare Krishna became a household word. Everybody knew Hare Krishna. Now, not everybody understood what Hare Krishna meant. For example, this is a humorous story. Prabhupada never promoted himself. He always promoted Krishna. So no one really knew A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So when Prabhupada was traveling, the reporters and the general public, they thought that he was Hare Krishna, because Hare is an English name. Oh. Hare Krishna. So when the devotees realized that nobody knows Prabhupada, because Prabhupada is so humble that he's only presenting Krishna, so nobody knows Prabhupada, then we have to actually promote Prabhupada. And so at that time, around that time, Prabhupada in the early days was just known as Swamiji. So they wanted to glorify Prabhupada more. And so they asked him, you know, is that a good enough title for you? Or what title would be better? What is the best title in our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya? So Prabhupada explained that the actual best title in our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is Prabhupada. We have Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, we have Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. So then the devotees asked him, can we call you Prabhupada? So Prabhupada agreed. And that's why we now know him as Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada continues on this topic of popularity in the late 60s and early 70s. In Los Angeles, because in Los Angeles, our Los Angeles temple was our world international headquarters. I resided there for some time, so did Sarva. And it was a wonderful temple. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of devotees. For Mangalarti, the temple room was packed. You could hardly get in. And for Sundar Arti, if you didn't get down there 10 or 15 minutes before, there was no way you could ever get into the temple because there was more people for the Sundar Arti than for the Mangal Arti. Who knows why? Same amount of devotees. Because guests... There were always guests coming. Devotees were inviting guests. And there were so many guests. They wouldn't come for Mangalarti, who's going to get up at 3 a.m. and drive to the temple. But so they would all come for the Sundararti. So when we were in the Brahmacharya Ashram, we had to get down there early. Otherwise, you couldn't get in. It'd be packed. And the doors would be open. You'd just have to watch from outside. That was our Los Angeles temple. It's the same temple today. So in Los Angeles, many fathers and mothers used to come to see me to express their feelings of gratitude for my leading the Krishna consciousness movement throughout the entire world. So the parents not only appreciated, but some of them became devotees and helped the movement extensively. I know of several cases, and there's probably many cases that I'm not aware of. So that was very well known, that everyone was accepting Krishna consciousness because the devotees were behaving so nicely. Because how do we judge? We judge by someone's behavior. The parents were seeing that their children were now more ladies and gentlemen than they were before, more polite, more serious about life. They had so many more good qualities. So they came to Prabhupada and they thanked him. You've done something wonderful for my children. So Prabhupada continues that some of the parents said that it is greatly fortunate for the Americans that I have started the Krishna consciousness movement in America. But, actually, the original father of this movement is Lord Krishna himself, since it was started a very long time ago, but is coming down to human society by disciplic succession. This is parampara. If I have any credit in this connection, it does not belong to me personally. But it is due to my eternal spiritual master, His Divine Grace, Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya, 108 Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. So Prabhupada is giving us an example of how a disciple sees himself. What is his mentality? In that he never takes any credit for himself, but he gives credit to his spiritual master. So, for example, if I was to ask you, who was the person that Lord Chaitanya prophesied would spread the holy name all over the world, who was that person? What would you all say? Prabhupada. But he wouldn't say that. He didn't say that. In a purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where the verse is quoted, Prithivi te jato ache nagaratigram sarvatra prachar hoibe mornam, Lord Chaitanya says that this movement, that the holy names will spread to every town and village throughout the world. So Prabhupada comments in the purport that now in our lifetime we have seen this prophecy has come true. And it has been fulfilled by His Divine Grace, Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is preaching all over the world through His disciples. So, Prabhupada is, again, in that instance and in this instance, he's showing us that if the spiritual master had not given an instruction, then we would not have done it. Prabhupada would not be traveling around the world if his spiritual master hadn't emphasized and requested him to do that. Now, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur only made the suggestion. He said, you're a very educated young man, you speak English, it would be good for you and good for the English-speaking people if you spread the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the English-speaking countries. It was a suggestion. But Prabhupada, in 1975, Prabhupada came three times to L.A. He came in February, came in June, and in July. And in February, were you there in February? Okay. So in February, he came from Hawaii. So he wasn't there for the morning Bhagavatam class because he arrived around noon. But there was a big, a celebration going to be after Sundar Arti. And the Vaikuntha players were going to perform a drama. At any rate, it was a brilliant drama. Prabhupada loved it. And he spoke afterwards. And one of the things he said was, "My Guru Maharaj ordered me to spread this Krishna consciousness movement in the English-speaking countries." So Prabhupada took it as an order. He said he ordered me, but actually it was merely a suggestion. And my understanding of why Prabhupada took it as an order is because at different times Prabhupada spoke on different things. One time he was speaking about the different types of devotees. He said, "The devotee that you approach and you ask, 'Can you please do some service?' and that devotee happily responds to do that service." Prabhupada said, "That is third class devotee. Second class devotees, he doesn't wait to be asked. He goes and inquires, 'Is there anything to be done? Any service needs to be done?'" Prabhupada said, "That is second class." And first class devotee, he doesn't wait to be asked, nor does he inquire, but he understands the mind of his spiritual master and he does the needful. And Prabhupada, if you look, if you go through the Veda base, just search for "do the needful." Prabhupada used that phrase so often. We do the needful. So he did the needful for his spiritual master because he understood that his spiritual master wanted to spread this international Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. And because he made a suggestion, "Prabhupada, why don't you do it?" Prabhupada took it as his life and soul. "He ordered me." And he gives all credit to his spiritual master, because if he wouldn't have ordered or wouldn't have even suggested, perhaps Prabhupada would not have even gotten the idea. So that's why he says, "If I have any credit in spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, it does not belong to me personally, but it belongs to my Guru Maharaj." Then he says, "If personally I do have any credit in this matter, it is only that I have tried to present Bhagavad Gita as it is without any adulteration." And this is something else that Srila Prabhupada said in Los Angeles. On that evening, it was February 9th, 1975, when he said, "My spiritual master ordered me." So in that short talk, he also said, "If I have any credit, it is only one thing, that I've delivered to you the message of the parampara as it is, without adding anything, without subtracting anything." That, Prabhupada said, was his only credit. He delivered it as it is, no changes. And he gave an example. Just like the government may send a letter to a citizen, so the postman doesn't open up the letter, read it, take out this word, add another word. No, he delivers it as it is. So Prabhupada compared himself to a postman delivering the message from the Supreme Government, Lord Krishna, to us, the individual devotee. So I remembered that very clearly, that talk, because Prabhupada was so humble, his humility. And it struck me so much, so deeply. So I was very much focused on what he said, and it went deep into my heart. And of course, I've recounted this many, many times over the years. So it's almost like I was hearing him say it again and again and again. So Prabhupada says it again here in this preface. If I have any credit, it's only because I presented Bhagavad Gita as it is, without any adulteration. Before my presentation of Bhagavad Gita as it is, almost all the English editions of Bhagavad Gita were introduced to fulfill someone's personal ambition. I remember in 1968, I first came across the Bhagavad Gita, but it wasn't Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. It was a Bhagavad Gita by an author named Christopher Isherwood, an English author. And he only had the shlokas, English translation. There were no purports. I read it. I didn't get much out of it. I couldn't understand or grasp its deep meaning. But what I did get from it was the word Krishna. That came through. So Krishna, at least Christopher Isherwood was able to convey the name of Krishna. And it was only later, in 1969, when I first met the devotees and got a Bhagavad Gita, first I got a Back to Godhead magazine in 69, that I was, able to try to first understand the Gaudiya Vaishnava understanding. Because at that time, I have to admit, I was following Mayavadi conception. I only had influence from Mayavadi gurus. So up until that point, I was reading those books. Until I finally met the devotees in 69 and got a Back to Godhead magazine. So Prabhupada says, our attempt in presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is to present the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, rather than present someone else's personal ambition, as other authors try to do. Our business is to present the will of Krishna, not that of any mundane speculator like the politician, the philosopher, or the scientist, for they have very little knowledge of Krishna, despite all their other knowledge. When Krishna says, Manmana bhava mad bhakto mad yaji mam namaskuru, we, unlike the so-called scholars, do not say that Krishna and his inner spirit are different. Krishna is absolute, and there is no difference between Krishna's name, Krishna's form, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's pastimes. So we've all heard this before, that Krishna's nam, gun, rup, and lila, non-different from Krishna himself. But obviously, the guna is different than the rupa. The lila is different than the nam. So this is the achintya veda veda tattva understanding. Simultaneously different and simultaneously non-different. And this is considered achintya because it seems to be contradictory, a paradox. And this is the tattva that Lord Chaitanya used to spread his mission around India 500 years ago. So Prabhupada continues, this absolute position of Krishna is difficult to understand for any person who is not a devotee of Krishna in the system of parampara, disciplic succession. Generally, the so-called scholars, politicians, philosophers, and swamis, without perfect knowledge of Krishna, try to banish or kill Krishna when writing commentary on Bhagavad Gita. See, this is very interesting what Prabhupada is expressing here. the Mayavadis, they minimize Krishna's position. They accept that he attained perfection, but that we can also attain perfection. He merged into Brahman, became God. We can also merge into Brahman and become God. It's not that he's the supreme personality of Godhead above all others. So they minimize Krishna's position. Prabhupada doesn't use the word minimize. He uses banish. To banish means I don't want to see you anymore. You know, you're barred from coming here. Or try to kill Krishna. That's how Prabhupada sees it. You know, I see it as they're minimizing, but Prabhupada's seeing is they're banishing and they're killing Krishna. That's the difference between someone who loves Krishna so much and someone who's just beginning to love Krishna. We don't take it so seriously. But if it was my own child and someone minimized my own child, I would take it much more seriously because I have a much deeper connection with my own child. And if someone was very kind to my own child, I would be very favorable towards them. Oh, you're such a wonderful person. Just like, I can give the example. We have our cleaning lady. She comes Jarupacha every day, cleaning the house. Sometimes she brings her young daughter. So we treat her young daughter very nicely. Today, for example, and other days, I give her a date or I give her a piece of cake or something. And the mother appreciates that so much that she brings from her home food that she's prepared. Today she brought Cuddy, hot cuddy. And I was very surprised when she handed me the hot cuddy because the container was hot and it's freezing cold. She comes at 9 o'clock in the morning. She must have held it right by her, you know, to keep it warm for us. But she appreciates us so much because we're appreciating her child and kind to her child. So similarly, Prabhupada, when he sees that we're so kind to him, to Krishna, he blesses us unlimitedly. Or when Krishna sees that we're so kind to Prabhupada, he blesses us unlimitedly. Because they're on this amazing high platform of love, which we have yet to come to. But we can understand and appreciate this. And in Bhakti Yoga, we want to come to that platform of such loving feelings and mood. And that's why I like to say that the Bhakti Yoga is the yoga of gratitude, because gratitude means that we understand what someone has done for me. And I want to do something to show my appreciation, to show my gratitude. Prabhupada, another example in this case. Prabhupada once, he explained to me, I had a private darshan with Prabhupada in that room in that November 1976. So one of the things he said to me, he said, "Saul, wherever you go and whomsoever you meet, you share with them the knowledge that you have received from me, Bhagavad Gita, with others. They will benefit and you will benefit." He used the word share. Share the knowledge you've received. So, of course, in a private darshan, you're like fully focused and full attention, so went deep into my heart. Later on, Prabhupada gave a talk and he made a comment that I related to this. He was speaking about something completely different. And in the talk, he said, he gave the definition of a thief. A thief is a person who takes the property of someone else and keeps it for his own benefit. That's the definition of a thief, according to Prabhupada. Everybody agree that's the definition of a thief? So I related that to what Prabhupada told me, that the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita belongs to Krishna. If I keep it just for my own benefit, I have the mentality of a thief. But Prabhupada told me to share it with others. So when I take the knowledge that belongs to Krishna and I share it with others, then I no longer have the benefit of a thief, the mentality of a thief. Then I have the mentality of a sadhu. This is what a sadhu does. He's working for the benefit of others, and in this way, his life becomes beneficial and is perfect. So, Prabhupada now, we continue, he was saying about the unauthorized commentaries where they banish Krishna. Such unauthorized commentary upon Bhagavad Gita is known as Mayavad Bhashya. And Lord Chaitanya has warned us about these unauthorized men. Lord Chaitanya clearly says that anyone who tries to understand Bhagavad Gita from the Mayavadi point of view will commit a great blunder. The result of such a blunder will be that the misguided student of Bhagavad Gita will certainly be bewildered on the path of spiritual guidance and will not be able to go back to home, back to Godhead. So we're very fortunate that we've come to the right path, not the Mayavad Bhashya path, but the Vaishnav understanding, so that we can understand Bhagavad Gita as it is. Then Prabhupada says, our only purpose is to present this Bhagavad Gita as it is in order to guide the conditioned student to the same purpose for which Krishna descends to this planet once in the day of Brahma, or every 8,600,000,000 years. This purpose is stated in Bhagavad Gita, and we have to accept it as it is. Otherwise, there is no point in trying to understand the Bhagavad Gita and its speaker, Lord Krishna. So that purpose is to reestablish our loving relationship with Krishna and to share that with others. So at the end of this life, by Krishna's mercy, by his ashirvad, we can go back home, back to Godhead. So Prabhupada says that his only purpose is the same purpose as Krishna's purpose. In other words, Krishna's purpose and Prabhupada's purpose is the same. So, whatever is Krishna's opinion, that's Prabhupada's opinion. Now, if I have a different opinion than Prabhupada, if I have a different opinion than Krishna, can I say I'm a follower of Krishna? No. Can I say I'm a representative of Krishna? No. Therefore, we can't mental speculate. We have to know what Krishna is saying. Then we can represent him. Then we know what Krishna's opinion is, and I can have my opinion in consonance with his opinion. Because I think we all agree that Krishna's opinion is topmost, is perfect, is pure, because he has the vision, the grand vision. He can see everything. He sees the big picture, the total picture, the complete picture. Therefore, his opinion is all-powerful, all-truth. We have blinders on. So our opinion, if it's not in consonance with Krishna's opinion, becomes, as Prabhupada said, simply a blunder. And when we're blundering in our spiritual life, that bewilderment will harm us. It will perhaps prevent us from going back home, back to Godhead, which is the only reason why we joined this movement. This is the, at least when we joined the movement. I don't know about nowadays why people join the movement, but when he joined the movement, when Prabhupada was here, the purpose and the reason for joining this movement was to go back home, back to Godhead in this life. There was no other reason. This was the movement. If you want to go back home, back to Godhead, this is it. We weren't here to establish a new religion, to become equal to the Catholic Church, to become famous all over the world, to have more temples than churches. No. This was the movement to go back home, back to Godhead. So that's Krishna's opinion, that's Prabhupada's opinion, and that's still my opinion also. So Prabhupada says that Lord Krishna first spoke this Bhagavad Gita to the sun god some hundreds of millions of years ago, and we have to accept this fact and thus understand the historical significance of Bhagavad Gita without misinterpretation based on the authority of Krishna. To interpret Bhagavad Gita without any reference to the will of Krishna is the greatest offense. So here again, it's very interesting. Prabhupada says if anyone interprets Bhagavad Gita as in a way that misinterprets the authority of Krishna, he says that is a great offense. I would say it's a great blunder, great mistake. But Prabhupada considers it an aparad because he has so much love for Krishna. How dare you cheat people by presenting something that's not what Krishna's opinion and saying it's Krishna's opinion. It's a lie. It's a hoax. It's bogus. Prabhupada's strong on this point because he has such feeling. And our feeling is not at that level, so we may not be so strong. Sometimes we may be fanatical, but it's not. Fanatic doesn't come from the heart. Fanatic comes from the head, from the intellect, from the mind, actually. Not even the intelligence, but from the mind. So Prabhupada continues, in order to save oneself from this offense, one has to understand the Lord as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As he was directly understood by Arjuna, Lord Krishna's first disciple. Such understanding of Bhagavad Gita is really profitable and authorized for the welfare of human society in fulfilling the mission of life. So, Prabhupada made a comment here that we have to understand the Lord as a Supreme Personality of Godhead, as he was directly understood by Arjuna. Now, every translator of Bhagavad Gita, and there's hundreds and hundreds of books on Bhagavad Gita by so many swamis, philosophers, and what have you. And they all say that theirs is the authorized version. Theirs is the true version. This is the genuine translation. So how do we know which is the authorized Bhagavad Gita? How do we know whether this Gita is authorized or that, or Prabhupada's? How do we know?
If we follow the parampara.
Well, that's a good answer. If we follow the parampara, but if we don't know what is the parampara understanding. Sorry?
Seeing the end result. After reading, what's the result?
Okay, judge by the result. Judge by the result. Well, if you look at the Mayavadis, you know, we travel and preach all over India and in the West, and we're invited to do kirtan at Mayavadi places, ashrams, centers. And they have developed happiness
peace, they're calm. They're also on the path. They're not on the path of Krishna consciousness, but they're not in the material path. They're on the spiritual path. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan iti sabjate. So there's three realizations. So they're on a lower level. But they think that that it's authorized, it's bona fide. So how do we know which is the real Gita? Sorry? Oh, okay. In every ashram, they'll say, my guru has given the Bhagavad Gita as it is. We say that, they say that. We say it's our parampara, they say it's also our parampara. They also have a parampara, Mayavadi parampara. So they all give the same answers we give. So how do we know which is the genuine Bhagavad Gita? It's very important that we understand this. Shankaracharya also gave word for words and came to a different conclusion.
Commentary on the Bhagavad Gita is based on the Shastra.
So these are all good answers, but it's the same answers that any person in any yoga center will give about their guru and their parampara. But Prabhupada gave us the actual understanding. And he kind of hinted at it here. We know which is the authorized and genuine, real understanding of Bhagavad Gita because whatever Arjuna's understanding is, that is real Gita. However Arjuna understands Gita, that's the real Gita because Arjuna was right there, face to face, talking. And as Arjuna understood whatever Krishna said, that's real Gita. Some 5,000 years later, we give some commentary. We were not there. And we're presenting that this is the real Gita. 5,000 years later, it's a little bit ridiculous when you think about it. So what is Arjuna's understanding? Because after speaking the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna asks Arjuna a question. And instead, here I'll just read to you the question. Here it is. O son of Prita, O conqueror of wealth, have you heard this with an attentive mind? He's now finished speaking the Bhagavad Gita. Now, up to now, Arjuna's been asking questions. This is the first question by Krishna. Have you heard this with an attentive mind? And are your ignorance and illusions now dispelled? So that's Krishna's question. What's Arjuna's answer? Arjuna Uvacha. Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, O infallible one, my illusion is now gone. I have regained my memory by your mercy. I am now firm and free from doubt and am prepared to act according to your instructions. So that's the real meaning of Bhagavad Gita. That's how Arjuna understood what Krishna said. I'm free from doubt. I'm prepared to act according to your instructions. And he does. Now, who else heard the Bhagavad Gita besides Arjuna? Well, Dhritarashtra heard it not directly. Sanjay heard it directly. Dhritarashtra heard it indirectly. So the next shloka, after Arjuna says, yes, I have understood everything you said, I'm now firm and free from doubt, I'm prepared to act according to your instructions. Just tell me what to do. I surrender. That's it. That's Bhagavad Gita. So then the next shloka, Sanjaya Uvacha. Sanjaya said, thus have I heard the conversation of two great souls, Krishna and Arjuna. And so wonderful is that message that my hair is standing on end. Sanjaya's hair is standing on end hearing Bhagavad Gita. When I read that, I was thinking of my hairs. My hairs were not standing on end. I did not have the same experience as Sanjaya. Sanjaya is obviously at a much higher level than me. Now, not only that, this, Sanjaya continues, O King, meaning Dhritarashtra, as I repeatedly recall this wondrous and holy dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, in other words, as he's remembering what Krishna has said, I take pleasure, being thrilled at every moment. And I was asking myself, am I thrilled at every moment having read Bhagavad Gita? It really put me in my place. Compared to Arjuna and Sanjaya, you know. And then he says, Sanjaya, we're really getting the mood of Sanjaya here. He wasn't even there directly. Sanjaya, by his mystic potency, was able to hear Krishna speaking to Arjuna far from far away. Kurukshetra to, you know, Hastinapur. It's a long distance. But by his mystic potency, he was able to focus in and share that with Dhritarashtra. So here's what else he says. This is the third shloka he says. As I remember the wonderful form of Lord Krishna, I am struck with wonder more and more, and I rejoice again and again. Boy, what a devotee Sanjaya is. And we hardly give him any credit. Then he says, you know, this is, by the way, the final four shlokas of Bhagavad Gita is Sanjaya. He opens the Bhagavad Gita. Well, no, Dhritarashtra does, actually. He asks the question. But here he says, the final shloka of the Gita, Sanjaya gives his conclusion. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. So this is what Sanjaya is sharing with Dhritarashtra. Hare Krishna. And Sanjaya is such a great mystic that he could focus in on that conversation and repeat it to Dhritarashtra. But Vyasadeva is also a supreme mystic. And he understood everything that Sanjaya was saying and Dhritarashtra was saying. He put it all down in the Mahabharata. What a great master mystic Vyasadeva was. So by studying these texts and this history, we can see what a great literature this is, coming from such great personalities that existed, that lived 5,000 years ago, that there's no one like that in our day and age. We've become like ants in comparison. You know, if you go into the forest, you come across an anthill, and you see many ants scurrying here and there. And they're all doing their business. They're bringing things into the anthill. And one ant may be thinking, I'm doing better service than another ant. Sometimes you see an ant taking something that, you know, a little tiny thing, but for him it's big. He's carrying it. He's thinking, I'm doing big service. But from the human point of view, they're all just ants. We don't think this ant's better than that. Similarly, from Krishna's point of view, we're just like ants. He doesn't see any of us as more important than the other one. But as we establish our loving relationship with him, then we enter into a deeper connection. So, in the beginning, when we, you know, we're traveling through the universe, so many bodies, so many lives, finally, Brahmitekona Bhagavana Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij, we come across a Vaishnava who brings us, you know, by Krishna's mercy, who brings us, and we make a connection with Krishna through his Krishna devotees. That's the first step. But what we ultimately want to do is to enter into a loving relationship. If we just stay at the connection, we haven't opened the jar of honey. We have the jar, no doubt, but we haven't unscrewed the top. We're not tasting the nectar. We have to enter into that loving relationship. So the connection is just step one. And we don't want to stay at step one. 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. Then we're like a hamster on the wheel, working so hard and staying in the same place. You've seen that, right? And that wheel, what's it called? Samsara. And that's, we've been hamsters, birth after birth after birth after birth, staying in the same place, not really entering into a loving relationship with Krishna and going back home, back to Godhead. And the fact that we're all here today is proof that we didn't go back to Godhead in our previous life. So what's going to happen in the next life? That's what we have to think about. Am I again going to be sitting here in the 22nd century listening to Bhagavad Gita? Or will I finally get it together and go back home, back to Godhead, and get serious about spiritual life? So the choice is ours. Just like Krishna said to Arjuna, have you heard attentively? Are you ready to act? You know, he didn't force. He just asked, you know, it's up to you. There's no force. And I remember Prabhupada saying one time, love means no force. So, we're almost at the close. There's just a few minutes left. Are there any questions or comments?